I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you so much for listening. It's a delight, as ever, and as I say, regularly a privilege, be talking to you all.
Dreamy.
I look forward to it.
Me too.
And it's not always the subjects, but certainly the wonderful response we get from our listeners.
We've had some nice... I put a picture of us on our Instagram today because we've got quite a few new followers. Hello, new followers.
Hello.
New listeners, if you're new to listening also as the Instagram. I mean, one would hope that you listen and don't just follow us on Instagram, but maybe you do.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't mind.
I put this picture up, look, of us at my 30th birthday.
Oh, my goodness me. Crikey. I've got that on my phone.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
Had some lovely comments. And 245 people liked it, Dad. Can you believe it?
I can. 245 people. My word.
I said,
It's frightening.
And everyone said, what a lovely picture.
It is a lovely picture. I agree. Mm. I liked it at the time. Oh. That was in the old Joe Allen, wasn't it?
This person says, I asked followers for podcast recommendations and some folk recommended you. I'm already a fan, but it was good to know how much you're loved. That's nice.
Very.
I really enjoy your podcast. They help me through the day while working at home.
Well, yes, I think everybody needs a bit of help through the day when we're working at home. Mind you, I've spent my entire career working at home, pretty much.
Someone said, do so enjoy your work.
Hmm.
Well. Ooh, just discovered you. Can't wait to listen. Happy Thursday.
Goodness me.
Oh, isn't that nice?
No, it's very nice.
You're very lucky.
Well, extremely lucky.
How are you anyway? I haven't seen you for a bit.
I think I'm all right. A bit older.
A bit older. Nothing. Not as old as you will be next month.
No, that's true. It's my birthday next month. grown. No, it's been quite a good week. I did a bit more World's Most Evil Killers.
Yeah.
One of those... We did two. One more straightforward. One of those enormously complicated multiples.
Oh, yeah. American one, was
American. It's the Washington Snipers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very good story, but boy, oh, boy, is it complicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, to get your head around it, that just for a start, and then try and simplify it so that people can follow it. It's somewhat complicated. But anyway, just okay. Everybody seemed to like it. Went well. New location, which is quite good.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite as noisy, nor up so many steps.
You didn't have the scary steps to go up.
No, I didn't have the scary steps. Otherwise, I've been prepping this and doing various other things, including the Crime Con book club.
Yeah, Crime Con book club.
Yep, we did Nazir Afzal's book, The Prosecutor, which is actually very interesting.
Did Nazir come on the...
Yeah, he after me.
Looked like he did.
Yeah, he did. Yes, yeah. Unfortunately, the next one we're doing, which is Blood in the Water, by a Canadian called Silver Donald Cameron. And sadly, he died shortly after submitting the manuscript. It's a very interesting book. Mm. And it's about a crime, a kind of vigilante crime. Can that ever be justified? It's very, very interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's set in Canada.
Canada.
Yeah. And, well, there's always quite a lot of things. And I'm reading the latest Bill Clinton, James Patterson novel.
Yeah, they've done a decent amount of press around that, haven't they?
The President's Daughter, yes. Well, I mean, they'll sell gazillions of it. I mean, there's no question. It's very well done. Actually, there's a better... debut by a lady called T.J. Newman, who it's called Falling. It's about the hijack of a plane flying from California to New York, and she was a flight attendant, and she wrote it on the red eye, most of it on the red eye.
That's a clever idea.
You know, and she wrote this "What Would Happen If" story. Very, very clever. And obviously had a lot of help because she didn't know. I think she wrote to 41 agents said no until she wrote to the 42nd.
Oh, my God, amazing.
And he said,
that
yeah, I think
this shows perseverance is key.
Yeah, and he said, yeah, that sounds great. I think this is a great idea. We can. And what they did was they got the right editors and it's very, very good.
You're so smart.
And she's a smart woman. 11 years on Virgin American and Alaska Airlines.
Hmm.
And I heartily recommend it. It's called Falling by TJ Newman.
I will try and take a picture of it and remember to post. But if you want to know about these books that Jeffrey talks about and we haven't written them down because we're a bit rubbish, please just write to us. You can contact Dad through his website.
Yes.
Or you can email bloodties.podcast@gmail.com or write to us through Patreon if you're a Patreon member or through Instagram.
Yep.
We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook.
Yes.
It's all bloodties_pod mainly.
Absolutely.
And so please do ask.
Please, please do. But we'll try and remember to take a picture of that one.
I know, but then I actually have to post it. I will try and remember.
Okay.
Well, we can send it to Sam, and Sam will probably put it somewhere sensible.
Yes. Well, I can't put it anywhere. I've got no idea how to do it.
No, that's true. You can't. Anyway, we should probably...
Yes. But how's your week been?
No, fine, yeah. Oh, I had an MRI.
Did you?
Hmm.
What for?
Got a cronky hip.
Oh, crikey.
I know. I got a cronky hip. It's very sore.
What do they say about it?
I don't know yet. I'm having my session with the physio on Monday to review my
cronky hip.
My cronky hip results. I've never had an MRI before.
I don't always like them very much.
You don't have to go so far in because obviously the middle of it needs to be around the bit that's being x-rayed. So obviously it's not like my whole head had to go in.
I think the worst one I ever had was it was like you're caught in a sandwich and had to be there for an hour.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And it wasn't one of those round and round ones. It was one that you just, the top bit came down on you.
Oh God, horrible.
It wasn't nice.
Hmm.
I mean, they made it as best they could. But
One, they gave me earplugs and then they gave me headphones. And the bit I disliked the most was that I had to listen to Magic FM for the full 25 minutes while I was doing.
Yes, because you changed the station.
Yeah. I was like, surely you just play Classic FM or something a bit less. Do you know what? I did actually think to myself at one point when I was in there, I think Jeffrey would get very angry if he was forced to listen to Magic FM during anything.
I think I would. I think I'd
compl- DJ was such an idiot and he was saying such stupid things. And I was just like, oh, God.
Zero law. Couldn't you at least choose the music policy?
Yeah, then? Exactly.
Okay.
Anyway, off we go. So we're doing a story you picked this week.
Yes, I picked it because it's very much in the news. It's a man called Colin Pitchfork. Who has become eligible for parole. And indeed, the parole board announced on Monday that they were perfectly happy for him to be released. It's, to use their phrase, suitable for release, subject to 35 conditions, including tagging. The South Leicester MP, Alberto Costa, said he was appalled by the decision. Families of the victims were appalled by the decision. And it struck me that a lot of people might have read the story, but not know anything about the crime.
Yeah, because it happened a while ago.
It was in the 80s. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what are we calling this?
I think we're going to call it the Narborough Village Murders.
The Narborough Village Murders. Okay.
Okay. Because it all takes place in villages in Leicestershire, very close to each other. Okay.
Here we go with the Narborough Village murders.
Murders too. Colin Pitchfork was born in a little Leicestershire village. An uneventful childhood, except that he had a tendency to expose himself from quite a young age. Was a flasher, and indeed before he was 20 he'd been convicted of flashing or indecent exposure, as some people like to call it, and had therapy for it. Nevertheless, at the age of 21 he married a social worker and they had two children. So far, you might say, so normal. Except there's something about that secret sex life that never disappeared. At the age of 16, he was born in 1960, so we're talking about 1976, he went to work for a local bakery called the Hampshire Bakery, and he became very good at it. First of all, he was an apprentice, and then he became a full-scale worker. He was particularly skilled at making cake decorations. You know, little men or all kinds of decorations. And indeed, at one point, was even discussing starting his own cake decorating business. But as one fellow worker said at the time of his time at Hampshire Bakery, he was hard worker, conscientious, but on the moody side. And then he said memorably about Pitchfork, he couldn't leave the female employees alone. He was always chatting them up. Well, we are talking about a young man in his 20s, early 20s. But what this conceals, and why I think it's interesting, is it conceals beneath the surface something of Pitchfork's incredible double life. On the 21st of November 1983, a 15-year-old girl called Linda Mann was taking a shortcut on her way home from babysitting. Pitchfork has delivered his wife to her evening class and has their infant son asleep in the back of the car. He nevertheless gets out of the car, attacks Linda Mann brutally, rapes her and strangles her with his scarf. No trigger, just bang, out of the blue. It's extraordinary. She's found a few hours later on a local footpath known there as the Black Pad. He gets back into the car with his infant son asleep, collects his wife from her evening class and goes home. That would, it appeared to have no impact on him whatever. I mean, just bingo. You've taken a 15-year-old girl's life and you go home and nothing's out of the ordinary. And, well, as you might imagine, we're talking about a small Leicestershire village, South Leicestershire, right in the middle of England. Leafy, green, although not in November, of course, not at that leafy at that point. But, you know, and a perfectly innocent, unsuspecting 15-year-old schoolgirl, and it's worth remembering that she was still at school, is attacked. And worse than attacked.
Must have really shook up the village.
Oh, I certainly did. It shook up the parents, of course, as well. The police, naturally enough, we are talking about 1983, go to a lot of trouble.
It happened 2 days before I was born.
Yes, it did. They detect a semen sample on Linda's body, and they detect that it's someone, this is long before really efficient DNA comes into work, they detect that it's a person with type A blood and a particular enzyme profile that matched only 10% of men. But equally, you see, it's a random attack. Who are they going to do? What are they going to do? They're going to
test every man in the surrounding area.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that was the only lead. No others at all.
No one saw anything.
No one saw anything. No one saw the car. No one heard a scream. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. More than 2.5 years later, on the 31st of July, 1986, a second 15-year-old girl, this time called Dawn Ashworth, has left her home to visit her friends. She's expected back at her parents at about 9:30. She never returns. 2 days later, her body is found in a wooded area near a footpath called 10 Pound Lane. She had been very brutally beaten, raped and strangled. Both murders took place in Leicestershire villages not far from Pitchfork's own home. But in those days we didn't do geographic profiling. Mm. Nor did we do offender profiling. We were looking for a man, probably a white male, probably under 40, you know. No, I mean, we are talking about 1986. It's a good long time ago. But then, of course, it being the British police, there is the inevitable suspect. How many times have we actually talked about this?
Well, they pick someone.
Yes.
Oh, you know, it's like a teacher from the school.
No,
or...
this one's a 17-year-old with learning difficulties.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Called that's awful.
Called Richard Buckland.
Oh, that's my worst.
Who's actually, funnily enough, he's clearly challenged, admits some knowledge of Dawn Ashworth's body. And this convinces the police that they've got their man. But he fundamentally denies knowing anything about Linda Mann 2.5 years earlier. Well, he's about to be, you know, charged.
Been to prison for a very long time.
But by a coincidence, and I do like coincidences sometimes in these stories, at Leicester University, a genetics researcher called Alec Jeffries was working on DNA profiling on stains, along with two members from the Forensic Science Service. The three men are asked to test Buckland, the 17-year-old with learning difficulties, to see if indeed he did attack Ashworth or Linda Mann. They conclude that without a doubt, the same man killed both Dawn and Linda, but it wasn't Buckland.
Because he doesn't have the enzyme.
Doesn't have the enzyme. He becomes the first man in the United Kingdom to have his innocence proven by DNA profiling.
Oh, wow.
And indeed, it was a remarkable breakthrough, and it certainly saved Buckland from a long period in jail. So the Leicester Police and the Forensic Science Service asked 5,500 local men to provide a blood and saliva sample. It took them 6 months, but no matches were found. Another perfect example of true crime at its best. It's always the ridiculous.
He got pulled over for a traffic offence.
No, it wasn't like Bundy and the beer at the taillight. You know, there's so many of those. On the 1st of August 1987, in other words, 1 year after the killing of Dawn Ashworth, one of Pitchfork's co-workers at the bakery is in the pub one night in Leicester. It's called the Clarendon. And he's telling the people he's drinking with that he'd taken the blood and saliva test for Pitchfork. And Pitchfork had paid him £200 to take it.
Oh.
Pitchfork's explanation to his said co-worker was, he wanted to avoid the test because of his previous convictions for indecent exposure. A woman overheard this conversation.
Oh my God, I love this.
In the pub, and told the police.
Go, that woman.
On the 19th of September, in other words, about 6 weeks later, Pitchfork was arrested. And during interrogation, he admitted exposing himself to more than 1,000 women.
Oh, Jesus.
In the county.
Such a weird thing to want to do.
I find it odd too, but some people get off on it, I suppose. He then gradually admitted during the interrogation by Leicester Police that he had progressed to sexual assault and then eventually to killing his victims to protect his identity.
So there's some poor women out there who'd also been sexually assaulted who were unidentified.
Yes. Now, perhaps this is one of the keys to the end of this story. But Pitchfork pleaded guilty to both the rapes and murders and to another incident of sexual assault. And he was sentenced to life. The Lord Chief Justice at the time commented, and I quote, From the point of view of the safety of the public, I doubt if he should be ever be released. Minimum sentence was set at 30 years, but in 2009 it was reduced on appeal to 28 years.
Why?
Pitchfork becomes what you might describe as the perfect prisoner.
That old chestnut.
Yes. Braille teaches, transcribes things for Braille and does music. He pumps a sculpture. One of his sculptures goes on display at the Royal Festival Hall in London. And it creates an outcry, so it's been taken down.
Oh, God, that is a bit, it's a bit gross. I don't think that's very good.
No.
I appreciate that you can be rehabilitated. Oh, that's quite complicated moral one, isn't it?
Well, anyway, when it gets to 2016, Hupower applies for bail, a parole hearing, and is refused. But the parole board recommend that he goes to an open prison. On the 3rd of May 2018, 2 years later, once again, his parole is refused. But this time he's been seen in Bristol walking about because of day release.
What is an open prison?
Open prison is one in which there aren't quite so many bars. That would be the best way of describing it.
Okay.
I always think of Fred West. In fact, he was in the same prison as Fred West at one point. Layhill, HM Prison, Layhill in Gloucestershire. But on the 7th of June 2021, that is indeed this month, the parole board agreed that he could be granted release, conditional release. Of course, if you break any one of the parole conditions, you go back to jail for the rest of your life. This provoked the most extraordinary storm, not least, of course, from the mothers of both girls, and indeed from the policeman who originally took Pitchfork's statement, a man called David Baker, all of whom saying the same thing. He's only 61. He's perfectly capable of committing these crimes again. Why on earth are you considering him for parole? The Justice Secretary in Britain, Robert Buckland, has asked for some legal advice. He has 3 weeks in which to consider whether or not this should be argued. 1 week of those is all but gone. It is a difficult case because the parole board had recently, not that long before, become embroiled in another controversy about a rapist, the so-called black cab rapist, David Warboys, now no longer known as David Warboys, just as Colin Pitchfork is no longer known as Colin Pitchfork. As I say, it's created a storm in Parliament, it's created a storm in the press, and by some marvellous bit of irony, if you like this kind of thing, the head of the parole board was given an honour in the Queen's birthday honours today. Ironically, there is legislation going through the House of Parliament at the moment which suggests, and indeed will insist, that anyone convicted of killing a child or a serial killer will not be eligible for parole. They will be given a whole life term as a matter of course.
Oh, blanketly.
Yeah. As a matter of course. There will be no argument about it. There can be no, he's a changed man. Mm. They will not. But at this moment, Pitchfork is entirely within his rights to ask for parole. Now, I've got two questions. In fact, I've got several. Okay. What's your view, Mo? Is this something that we should be considering? Is parole something that is only right, or should we throw a blanket over it all when it comes to the killing of 15-year-old schoolgirls? What do you think?
What's the rule, children and serial killers?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tricky one, Dad.
It is.
It's a very tricky one.
It's a very tricky.
I mean, can you be so blanket about something? Do you have to think about...
Is rehabilitation possible?
Do you have to give a psychoanalytical review of everyone, but then what about all of the ones who just trick all the psychoanalysts?
Like, yep.
The trickiest ones, anyway.
And bear in mind that Pitchfork didn't deny he pleaded guilty to the crimes.
I think if you've indecently exposed yourself to over 1,000 women in a relatively short period of time.
He was only 27 when he was sent to jail.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
And now he's 61.
I don't know.
If you were the parents, you would be...
Oh, yeah, no, I'd be like, throw away the key.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
But it's one of those ones which causes us a moral dilemma, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really tricky. It's a very tricky one.
But you and I have looked at cases. Well, I've got a list of a dozen people that men have been let out to kill again.
Yeah, we've talked about it many, many times.
And there is no doubt that Pitchfork's probably very adept at grooming the parole board. And presenting, and I don't like the word.
I think, right.
Okay.
Maybe. Now, if you have committed such awful crimes of that nature, of murdering a child or serial killing or serial rape or anything like that, then maybe you don't get the chance, like, even if you're rehabilitated. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've made the mistake. You already did it. Like, it's too... You've done it.
Yeah. I'm confess that over the years, I've become much closer to that point of view than I was, say, even 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I do believe that there are certain crimes which are so heinous that there is no rehabilitation.
Yeah. Or that it's just, well, you know, you've used up your one go, you know. Just,
yeah.
You did it.
But there's been no public expression of remorse from Pitchfork.
No, true.
Needless to say, his wife's disappeared and so have the family.
Yeah, God, poor family.
When he got home from killing Dawn, the second victim, guess what he did?
I don't know. Made a chicken Kiev and watched football.
No, baked a cake.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you said before, like, you know, with the first victim, oh, you know, no trigger, et cetera, that probably isn't true.
No.
Probably just been escalating to that point.
Yeah,
because
I'm sure that's right.
If he had said he'd sexually assaulted other women, I mean, Lord knows what he'd been doing.
Absolutely.
You know?
And it never came out.
And it's that, and unfortunately, as we hear and talk about so much more now, you know, those things that he did to those women will have just been like, oh, that's his way. Oh, he's flirt. You know, like, he probably had behaved very badly and got away with it because in that time,
yes,
you know, men could get away with that kind of thing much more than they would do now, thankfully.
Thankfully, yes.
Yeah, and also you've just got no idea. Like, he's been locked away in a prison for thing. You let him out and then suddenly he's amongst all, like, young women again, and who knows what his triggers are. Like, I think if you've been exposing yourself from a very young age, plus you have a thing for children, plus you did that much, then no, I think you've used up your get-out-of-jail-free card, basically.
I'm afraid I completely agree with you. Yeah. I think he's used up his get-out-of-jail card completely. I think, as I've said on a number of occasions, and I've said it repeatedly, I think the parole board is all too frequently tends to err on the side of the perpetrator and not the victims. And I fundamentally think that that's a mistake. I think they should take much more account of the whole record of offending than they do at the moment. Although, to be fair, the parole board are underway and going through a re-look at their own procedures. But Pitchfork absolutely, for me, defines someone who should not be let out, because at 61, for me, he's utterly capable of committing these crimes, that sort of crime again. And I'm happy to say that I don't believe that he justifies release. But under the current legislation, and given the parole board's decision, it'll take the Secretary of State for Justice to refer the case, because War Boys was referred. You may remember that there was an equal outrage when it was announced that War Boys had been granted parole. War Boys was referred and indeed remained in jail. I suspect Pitchfork, oh no, I don't suspect, I hope, and I'm touching wood when I say that, that Pitchfork receives the same treatment. I don't believe that a man capable of killing two 15-year-old schoolgirls, albeit in the 1980s, will ever quite have changed. He certainly expressed no relief, remorse. And no matter how wonderful he may appear, no, how much he may convince the prison authorities that he's a changed man, well, one of the things he's done is grow a beard. Because if you look at the original pictures...
Well, I don't think that changes a man.
No, I don't, but it makes him slightly less frightening. Yeah. If you look at a picture of him, darling, if you get your trusty iPhone, the original pictures are rather more eerie and creepy than the later pictures of him with his beard.
Colin Pitchfork. It's an unfortunate name as well, isn't it?
Yes. Well, he was born in Leicestershire.
I think he looks equally creepy. Beard and no beard.
Beard or no beard, okay. Well, that, as they say, is my thought for the day. What would you think if you'd been on the parole board? What would your opinion be? I should be fascinated to hear.
Yeah, please let us know in all of the ways I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. But yeah, on Instagram or email us or anything, all of the above.
Yes, and I'm perfectly happy to hear opinions on both sides or indeed any other middle ground opinion. But it's a pretty sharp case, this, a sharp distinction. A man capable of taking the lives of schoolgirls and is then free to walk the streets at the age of 61. Not sure, personally.
Feels dodgy to me.
And to me. But I'd love to hear what you, our listeners think. I should be fascinated.
Please let us know.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Dad. That was really interesting and good to go over that because it's, as you say, so prevalent.
It is. And it's in the news in this country at the moment. But, you know, the same issues are faced around the world. I mean, are they going to release Anders Breivik, for example?
Oh, God, the guy that shot all the kids in Norway.
That's right. Because Norway's rule is that no one can remain in jail for more than 21 years. This is going to come up.
I definitely don't think he should be allowed out of prison ever. What he did was unbelievably awful.
Yes, blow up a bomb first and then kill 69 people on an island. But society has to confront this. You can't say, oh, well, it's not my problem. Actually, it is. It's all our problem. What are we going to do? What do we believe? I was once told by a member of parliament very firmly that there's no votes in prisons. Well, no, except there aren't any votes in prisons, but there are issues like how do you treat someone who kills children or is a serial killer? Pitchfork doesn't qualify as a serial killer, does he?
No.
Because only two victims, not three.
Yeah. But it probably would have been three if he hadn't been caught.
Yes, well, it probably would if his workmate hadn't bragged in the pub. Absolutely. I mean, because he'd got away with it for more than 2.5 years the first time, more than a year the second time.
I literally love the woman who overheard and went to the police.
Yes. Now, it's I'm always fascinated, but it's always something quite unexpected
that gives people away.
Gives people away. It's, you know, being pulled over by a traffic cop.
Yeah.
You know, it's always the unexpected. It's not Sherlock Holmes or the behavioural science unit. It's almost always kind of...
Well, no, don't, though, because it's a bit depressing if you say that, because it makes it sound like, you know, detectives and policing are basically void and...
No.
We can't think like that.
And to be fair to Pitchfork, he was the first man caught and convicted on the basis of DNA evidence.
Exactly, and, you know, things have changed. You know, as you rightly said... You didn't do profiling back then, so of course the BAU wouldn't have found him because it wasn't something that we were using at that time.
But it's also interesting to note that this very morning, the spy in the bag...
I saw that had come out again.
Gareth Williams, they're going to go back on...
They think they can find something from a strand of hair.
That he had in his hand. They didn't think they had enough, but they think they do now.
We talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah.
When we did spy in the bag.
It's interesting, isn't it? That I'm not decrying at all. DNA is absolutely vital. And indeed the whole CSI operation, trace evidence and all, the lot.
I actually saw this morning on my way here on my road a police van driving past that said forensics unit on it. I've never seen that before.
Oh, yes.
I know obviously we have a forensics unit, but I've never seen their van before.
No, there you go.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
What are you doing this week? Don't tell me the same as last week.
Pretty much, yeah. I have a theatre trip. My client's in the theatre, believe it or not.
I do.
I'm not going this week. It's next week, I think. And yeah, there are a few more things like that happening.
Okay.
World's not opening up on the 21st of June, by the looks of it.
I don't think so. I watched the last series of the Kominsky Method.
Oh, did you love it?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was wonderful.
You're going to go back to the beginning and watch it
I'm
again.
I'm going to watch it all over
one.
Again.
Yeah.
It's just so wonderful. And it's got a great ending as well. I'm not spoiling
it.
I'm not spoiling it for anyone, but it's got a great ending. And it's got wonderful people in it. Morgan Freeman. Barry Levinson, Kathleen Turner.
Oh my God, amazing!
It's so true. It's very, very, very good. So I really enjoyed that. I watched Jimmy McGovern's Time.
Which, oh, did you?
Yeah.
I think we've got some people in that. Not me, but my colleagues have.
Yeah, it's very good. I mean, it's very Jimmy McGovern, but it's strong. Mm-hmm. Two great performances by Bean and Compton. A good depiction of prison. The incipient violence. It's a good piece. And no, I'm not going to be watching every football match.
Have you done a sweepstake? Who do you think will win? How did you feel about Gareth Southgate's open letter?
I thought it was fine.
I'm a bit of a fan of Gareth Southgate.
Oh, me too. I agree. I'm a fan of Gareth Southgate, and I think it's going to be France or Italy win it. Not going to be England.
Well, I know it's never us.
No.
Obviously.
Not England.
No. I think, it's nice something for people to get there.
Oh, yeah.
It's very, you know, I appreciate how morale boosting this whole sort of thing could be, and I'm thrilled that people have got something to be into.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a good focus.
Nice
and then
thing
we
for
have
the
lots
summer.
Of things to
yeah.
look at. Well, darling, thank you.
Well, there you go. Thank you. So thank you to all the people that help us out. Our producer, Sam Brain, my brother, Dan, who did the music, my friend, George, who drew our caricature, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to you, the listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you again for listening. And as I always say, this was Molly's idea in the first place. I don't think I knew what a podcast was. However, it's been an absolute thrill to do it. And thank you for listening. And as I say always, do be careful out there.